Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Passes, does it again!
Again!
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It is episode 149. If you're listening on drop day, it is November 11th. We are getting right into the thick of this offseason. This is the official podcast of Being Back in Business, also known as the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening, wherever you're getting your podcasts. Subscribe. We are everywhere. And rate 5 stars. Go through all the hoops to do it. It really helps us out. We really appreciate it. We're also on YouTube on the WEEI channel. So go find the Play Tessie playlist there. It has all of our episodes. Hit the thumbs up on the videos. Subscribe to WEEI. Find us on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. I'm here with Sammy. I'm here with Pat. Pat and I, fresh off of the Pedro Gala this past Friday, which was a lot of fun. Pat, how was your experience? Do you like the gala? That was fun. I had fun.
Yeah, it was a good time. I mean, we had a prime spot on the red carpet and got to see everybody who came through. And just got to hang out with the other beat guys. And yeah, it was a good time.
Yeah, we're talking to Sox legends, Sox of the past. Talked to Jose Bautista, which was random. Asked him if he knew how many Twitter followers he had. He seemed confident with his answer, but he was actually wrong. He said he had followed over a million people. The number is actually 803,000. His explanation was something like he had like an old social media manager that I guess thought it was a good idea at the beginning of Twitter, and he just is not going to go in and unfollow 800,000 people, so he's just stuck with it. But that was kind of interesting. But yeah, cool meeting like Big Poppy, Pedro. Like Pedro had obviously a banger of a quote talking about the Yankees not coming back from 03.
Yeah, Poppy, meeting Poppy was as surreal as I thought it would be. Feet went numb. And I think I just muttered the word Poppy as I shook his hand. So that was cool.
So, Sammy, I forget if I told you this, but if not, it doesn't matter because it's on the pod. And anyway, it's not like I told the listeners this. But like, so I had never formally met David Ortiz before this. Like there was that time at Winter Weekend last year where like I saluted to him and he saluted back. But like that's not really a formal meeting, whatever. So when I shook his hand, you know, like when you think you're meeting someone, but actually like you've met them before and one person says, good to meet you. And the other person says, nice to see you again. And it's like, oh, it was that, but it was reversed. I said, good to meet you, Poppy. And he said, good to see you again. I was like,
See,
Not to put a damper on what you're saying, but I say good to see you 100% of the time because I have a terrible memory and I always forget if I've met someone. I do that as like a safety barrier. But if he said nice to see you again, maybe.
Well, the thing is, I think that he probably just says, especially since like we were standing there with the Sox media, I think it's probably a fair assumption in his mind, even if it was wrong, that like, oh, because he's standing with the Sox media, obviously I've met this guy before at some point. But still, like,
nah,
did I big time Big Poppy?
I think he follows you on social. I think he has a burner. I think he's a big Gordo fan. Let's go with that.
But we got to get into it because we got a couple things that we are going to talk about today. If you want Garrett Crochet talk, I mean, you might get it this episode, you might not, but you're definitely going to get it in an episode coming tomorrow, a little bonus episode for you. We're doing 3 weeks here, and we're going to do some Who Says No action with Garrett Crochet dropping tomorrow. But today, I think the big news of the weekend, I mean, I shouldn't even say I think it is the big news of the weekend, is Roky Sasaki, absolute future superstar pitcher coming out of Japan, is getting posted this offseason. His team announced. I've got a bunch of stuff here written out for like who he is, like why he's crazy, why it's weird that like, should I just go over all this stuff and then we can give takes?
Yeah, I think we should. We can't assume that people know who Roky Sasaki is because of course never played in Major League Baseball. We probably didn't know who he was 2 years ago. I think he burst on the scene kind of in like 2022.
It was like right before the WBC.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, I think, yeah, give the whole list of why this guy's a freak.
Okay, here we go. Let me cook. So Sasaki is 23 years old, has the potential to be literally the best pitcher on the planet. He's pitched 4 professional years in Japan, a 2.02 ERA with an 11.4 K per nine. His fastball touches 102 miles an hour as a starter, which is like, that's the type of stuff we see from DeGrom and Paul Skeens. Like the guy threw a perfect game and then threw 8 perfect innings the next start and got pulled. Like, he's got a crazy fastball, amazing splitter, amazing slider. The only knock on him that is even out there is that his velocity dipped a little bit this year. He's been hurt on and off in the past, and so for a young guy, I guess that's a little bit of a concern, but that probably is the only knock. So to sign as an international free agent without restrictions, like what we saw Yoshinobu Yamamoto do last year, you have to be at least 25 years old and have 6 or more years of experience in a pro league recognized by Major League Baseball. So he's only 23 and he only has 4 years of experience there. So he is going to sign as an amateur, like as an international bonus pool free agent guy. So in a nutshell, each team basically has $5 to $7 million to spend every year on international kids. Think how like the Red Sox initially signed Devers, Bayo, Sidon Rafaela, etc. when they were kids. Like, that's what Roky Sasaki is doing here. I don't know why he wouldn't just pitch for 2 more years and then cash in like Yamamoto did. I don't know why his team, who had to agree to post him, didn't force him to stay 2 more years so that they could get, because they're going to get like 20-25% of whatever he signs for as like an additional, like the team is going to have to pay an extra 20-25%. So the team, instead of making 20-25% of like $400 million, is going to make 20-25% of like $4 to $6 million. But in essence, whoever gets the guy is going to have to pay him practically nothing. It's going to be a signing bonus, and then he's going to be under contract as like a rookie. Like all the rookies that come up in Major League Baseball, like they basically make minimum wage, which is like $760K for 3 years, and then they get to hit arbitration and make a little bit more for 3 years, and then they hit free agency after 6 years. That's what's going to happen with Sasaki. Mm-hmm. Because of that, all 30 teams are going to want him super badly because every single team can afford him. He's incredible. He slots into every single rotation. He's going to get that rookie contract. There's just no reason for teams to not want him. Mm-hmm. And therefore, there's going to be a lot of teams that aren't even going to get the time of day when he gets posted. For instance, like the Oakland A's are certainly going to want Roky Sasaki. Oh, they're not even the Oakland A's anymore. The A's. The A's. They're going to want him. They're not going to get a meeting. So he's going to get posted at some point. Teams are going to have 45 days to negotiate with him before he has to decide. If he doesn't sign by the end of that 45-day period, he has to go back to Japan for a year. So he will sign in that 45-day period. Okay, that am I forgetting anything?
Yeah, I think we should add this kid is 6'4", like 210 pounds. So he's not. Last year we had Yoshinobu Yamamoto come over from NPB in Japan, and obviously the reviews on him were fantastic, and he looked great in the World Series and everything. But you can't ignore the fact that he's 5'10", 175 pounds, like tiny for a pitcher, let alone a major league starting pitcher. So you look at Roki, holy crap. This guy looks like a horse. So he looks the part as well. And I just think it's really interesting that this isn't really going to come down to money. And this is something I believe we've never had a chance to discuss something like this. This is all about the sales pitch, which is super interesting because everyone's got the same, roughly the same amount of money. It's like pretty close depending on how much international bonus money you have. But this is like, if you're the Red Sox, Fenway Park, historic, young team, Andrew Bailey, Willard, good staff to work with. So that's the Red Sox pitch. Masataki Yoshida, player from Japan, some familiarity. I guess that helps. They have four staff members who speak Japanese as well, which I had no idea about until a few days ago. Interesting little twist to the situation. But yeah, like I said, this is all about the sales pitch. So, Red Sox got a shot, outside chance.
So we're going to get into that. I've got a couple of questions for you, but two things that hearing you talk made me realize that I forgot to add. So just to compare to Yamamoto a little bit more. So Yamamoto, a couple years older when he came over, he was a lot more polished when he was coming over. Like you were getting like a finished product, a guy who literally might be able to be an ace instantly. I think there are people who think Sasaki could also do that, but basically like what you're doing here, if you get Sasaki, is getting probably the top prospect in baseball, or at worst a top five prospect in baseball, depending on who you ask. So it's not like he's going to come in here and just instantly be prime Jacob deGrom. I mean, maybe he will be, but with Yamamoto, you were expecting like, okay, this guy's going to be ready to go help us compete for a World Series for sure right now. With Sasaki, there's at least a little bit of questioning. And then to piggyback off of your point of have we like dealt with this before? The only other time was Shohei Ohtani came over and did the same thing. He only signed with the Angels for like a little over $2 million. If I remember correctly, so the deal with Ohtani was when he was like a teenager before he went pro in Japan, he'd considered signing with the Red Sox and they were like in the mix until the very end there. And he decided to go pro in Japan. Once he did that and then got posted, I do not remember the Red Sox being very much in the mix at all for Ohtani. Oh, once he got posted.
You don't remember the Bruins jersey? The famous Ohtani Bruins jersey?
I don't think they got a meeting to use it.
That's so sad.
I do remember that existed, yes.
Is that true? They didn't even get a chance. They made the jersey for nothing? John Henry must have been furious. You made me spend $300 on this custom jersey? Damn it.
All right, I've got a question. Where, and don't take chance to sign him or whatever into account here. Where does Roki Sasaki stand for you in terms of which free agent you would want what free agents out there would you prefer the Red Sox sign to Roki Sasaki? Are there any? If there are any, who are they?
Okay, I would put him second only behind Juan Soto. So basically number one, because the Red Sox are not going to sign Juan Soto. So we'll say 1A, Roki Sasaki. No, Pat, don't you dare say it.
No, I teetered. I almost did it. He'll go two. Yeah, okay. I mean, Soto's, what, 25, 26?
26.
Yeah.
26, top three hitter in baseball. He has the pedigree. He has the ring. He has all the accolades. You lock him in. The crazy thing with him is if you sign Soto like a 14-year deal, he's only 26. Like you get nine very, very good years out of him. And then so what? 5 years of DHing, maybe not great. But Sasaki, 23 years old, already has A stuff, just probably needs a little bit of shaping. That's huge. He is like the Japanese Paul Skeens right now. Like, can you imagine Paul Skeens being a free agent right now and you can sign him?
Paul Skeens, that's probably the only young pitcher I would take over Roki Sasaki is Paul Skeens. Yeah. That's how good Roki is. And I would say he's number one in terms of fit with the Red Sox.
Well, take that into account. Understanding the fit with the Red Sox and throwing out the chances that you would sign Juan Soto over Sasaki still?
Okay, so this is just for the Red Sox?
You are the Boston Red Sox.
Just for the Red Sox, I'd probably go Sasaki because you already have Jaron Duran, Roman Anthony in AAA, Willier Abreu, Sadon Rafael. You got a ton of outfielders. And of course, it's Juan Soto. I would be thrilled. I'd be over the moon. Can you imagine if the Red Sox signed Juan Soto? But how often do you get a chance to sign a guy like Roki Sasaki? Pretty much never. So, I'm going to go. I guess he's one for the Red Sox.
For me, it's not even close. I would take Roki Sasaki over anyone else. It's not even close to a debate, because obviously Juan Soto is the premier guy. He's been my white whale for years. I know it's not going to happen. But with Sasaki, imagine getting the guy who you expect to be the pitcher version of Juan Soto. Like, Sasaki has a good shot to be the best pitcher in baseball. Juan Soto has a good shot to be the best hitter in baseball. But with Sasaki, the Sox need the ace more. But throw that out. This is a guy you're getting on a minute. Like, you can, when you get Sasaki for nothing, you can still spend that money on other things. You can add to him. If you sign Soto, like, that's your thing. You've done your thing. You've done your spending. With Sasaki, it's like, okay, we got Sasaki, but we haven't even dipped into the budget. Like, let's go get Blake Snell, Max Fried too. Like, so, you can do all that stuff. And then in addition to that, hold one sec. In addition to that, with Sasaki, that contract goes until his late 20s. You're not getting bad years from him. You're getting only prime years from him. With Juan Soto, there's a reason that he's going to command a deal in the 14-ish year range. And, you know, I think he's going to be awesome for the majority of that contract, but there's going to be a bunch of years on the end of that contract that obviously I'd be more than happy to put up with to get the good part of the contract. But there's none of that with Sasaki. But there are going to be like 4-ish years at the end of Soto's contract where he's DHing and maybe his OPS is below 850. And you don't love that, especially paying 40 mil for it. With Sasaki, he's cheap. He's a stud. He can grow with your crop of young players. Like, he fits perfectly with the mold of the team. He would be my definite number one guy.
So marketable too. Roki, that's so easy. Easy to market. So, okay, to put in perspective what we all just said, as the Boston Red Sox, hypothetically, if we were in charge, we would prefer a pitcher with zero Major League Baseball innings over Juan Soto. That's how good Roki Sasaki is expected to be. Now, if Roki comes to Major League Baseball and his first year he has like a 4.2 ERA, wouldn't shock me. But when this kid gets going, let's say 2 years from now, 2-3 years from now, probably a top five starting pitcher in baseball. And I'm comfortably saying that. And I don't know if I've ever said that about like a prospect, that they're going to be a top five pitcher in the league in X amount of years. That sounds kind of crazy. But this kid is so special. Like, 102 mile an hour fastball. What are we talking about here? It's nuts.
For a starter. Like, you see 102 from, like, Emmanuel Clase because he's throwing one inning.
Miller's, like, the talk of the town because he throws 102 a handful of times a game. Roki does it a handful of times an inning.
Exactly. Yeah, it's crazy. And so, we got to talk
thing?
About the...
One more Go thing. Ahead. Sorry. You remember when Dice K came to town? There was a whole like zoo of media that came all the way from Japan just to cover Dice K pitching. You would get that and more if you're the Red Sox. So that's appealing to John Henry. I said Roki, marketable name, rolls off the tongue. That's not a joke. I'm sure John Henry cares about that stuff. This town would fall in love with him.
It doesn't matter because he doesn't cost anything.
I know, but I'm saying they're going to like go hard and take this seriously, that they're going to like give a good sales pitch. It's just interesting to me like how many positives this kid comes with. It's unbelievable.
Okay. Obviously, every single team would do cartwheels, do anything to sign Sasaki. And that's what makes it so difficult, is that you literally have to prove to him that you're the best destination for him.
It's like a dating show.
It's The Bachelor. That's what this is. Yeah, the Red Sox are going on The Bachelor right now. And what percent chance, and back it up, do you give the Red Sox to sign Sasaki? Do you feel good about it at all?
No.
Neither do I.
No, almost no shot.
You know, like
2.5% chance.
That's higher than me.
Well, just because there's only 30 teams, so I'm
is that
not
the
a
half?
Big piece of the pie.
Who
has more of a chance? Who has more of a chance? Dodgers,
Mets.
Yankees, Mets.
Can I read you a quote from Jeff Cubs. From Mark Finesand?
Fine sand. I love that soft sand.
He said that one source said the teams most likely to have a shot at Sasaki are West Coast clubs and those that have signed Japanese players in the past. Aside from the Dodgers and Padres, the Giants, Yankees, Mets, Blue Jays, Cubs, and Rangers were among those mentioned by executives. Basically, the only thing that has been mentioned with the Red Sox regarding Sasaki was a couple of reports, and the recent one was Chris Cotillo this weekend saying that Craig Breslow and Top Sox brass went to Japan to take a look at him. But nobody nationally has even mentioned the Red Sox as having a chance.
I wonder if they even sent a scout. Like, do you even need to send a scout?
I think it's like more about like respect. It's like, oh, we're showing you the respect that like we came all the way here to
I'm saying.
Yeah, you don't
it's like
it.
you have Craig Breslow and like ownership there. Like, there's probably no scout. Like, normally you would bring a scout if you're looking at a kid that you want to meet. But no, not with this. That's weird, man. Like, preface this by saying, I live in Boston. We all live in Boston or in the Boston area. So it's kind of hard for us to take off the Red Sox goggles sometimes. But with the way the team is trending and the history of the team and like Fenway Park and everything, wouldn't you think a young kid would be interested in playing for the Red Sox? Maybe I'm, like I said, maybe I got my Red Sox goggles on, but like, why? The Padres? I guess San Diego's nice. Giants? Freezing cold at that ballpark? I don't know.
So here's my thinking. I was literally texting with my friend about why I think there's no shot of it happening. Sasaki's going to want to play for a winning team. The Red Sox have not been a winning team in practically any of the last 5-6 years.
Whoa.
He's doesn't what?
We're a losing team though.
For a few of them. He's going to want to play for a World Series contender. The Red Sox have not entered the season as a World Series contender since 2019. That's a fair statement.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
He doesn't want, like, there's reports out there, namely from Kylie McDaniel and Jeff Passan, that he doesn't want to, like, he may not want to play for a big market team. I think that's where the Padres come into play. For if he were to go there instead of the Dodgers, I don't think he wants too much pressure. Well, unfortunately, in Boston, there's a shit ton of pressure. He's going to want to play close to home. That's why Japanese players love the West Coast. It is so much easier. Like, my wife just flew to Japan. She's in Japan right now. And to get there, she had to fly to Seattle and take a layover in Seattle and then go to Japan. So it's considerably easier to get there if you're already playing on that coast. And then he's probably going to want to play with his friends. He loves Yu Darvish, is like his ultimate mentor. He loves Yu Darvish. And then he got tight with Otani and Yamamoto, playing with them during the World Baseball Classic. So that's another reason why those two teams are out in front. Obviously, the Red Sox have Yoshida, but Yamamoto was Yoshida's teammate. Sasaki, I don't know how well he knows Yoshida. So and we might get rid of Yoshida. Like, so it may not even matter. Like, there are so many things working against the Red Sox here. I literally give them a better chance. Like, I think there's a better chance that John Henry stuns us and gives Juan Soto the big contract than Roki Sasaki picks Boston.
No, because that's a 0% chance. Roki's 2.5. The other teams are like 5, 10, 20. Dodgers are 57%. And then the other teams just fill out the rest.
Pat, what's your percent?
not good. But like the thing regarding like the national media stuff is everyone has kind of thrown the Cubs in there. And I get like what he's looking for is good player development, relationships with the Japanese like players in the MPB, and then like player development, they also noted, which I thought was super interesting. So they threw the Cubs in, which I get, historical, great player development. They have Seiya Suzuki.
Imanaga.
That's
Imanaga, yeah.
Literally the Red Sox. Great player development, historical. We have Masataka Yoshida. And then when you take this meeting, I can almost guarantee you Koji Uehara, Daisuke Matsuzaka, Hideki Okajima are sitting at that table, as they should be. All of that said, the historical stuff, the player development, we have Masataka here. The staff speaks Japanese. Like, we have so much stuff going for us. I give us a 1.5% chance of this happening.
I think I literally give it like a 0.5% chance of happening.
Yeah, dude, the Red Sox even get like do the Red Sox get an advantage in terms of player development because they develop bats. They haven't developed the pitcher and friggin'. I mean, unless you want to count Hauk and Bayo, but like it's been
no, you're right.
Not much of a sample.
You're right. They'll tout this whole pitching program that they've got going, and I think we all agree it's going in the right direction, and it looks a lot better than it did. But when you're meeting with Roki Sasaki, he's going to want tangible results. Like, what have you done? And there's a lot of teams. Like, one that comes to mind for me that obviously wasn't listed there, but obviously is going to want him is the Tampa Bay Rays. Do you guys remember? I think I tweeted this. Do you remember Uesawa pitched for the Red Sox this year, like a couple of times? Yeah.
Giant hat.
Yeah, big hat Uesawa. He signed with the Rays before the season from Japan on a minor league deal, and he passed up major league deals elsewhere, which proved to be a mistake because they ended up letting him go.
Dumbest
he ended up
going elsewhere. I've ever heard. How not confident do you have to be in yourself? That is such a weak move. Like, I'm going to...
No, it's an investment in yourself. Like,
terribly dumb, in my humble opinion.
He liked the Rays because they have... The proof is in the pudding. They have developed so many pitchers, and he said, I want to be the next guy. They think that they can do this with me, so I believe in them.
What about Houston? That's a small market, good team, good development.
That they weren't listed, but I mean, maybe it's because I'm trying to think of Japanese players that they've signed before.
Kikuchi.
That doesn't count. Yeah.
Japanese players for Houston. Ooh, that's tough.
Yeah,
I
mean, and also, like, it's so much about, and I think, Pat, I think that might be why the Cubs are there, is because in the last 3 years, they've convinced two Japanese players to come sign directly from Japan, with them including a pitcher.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing, too, that's worth noting with Roki, just in case it wasn't sweet enough to get a 23-year-old future ace on a rookie-scale contract, not if, when he wins Rookie of the Year next year, that team also gets a first-round pick. So... That's just – so whoever gets Roki Sasaki gets a 23-year-old ace for the next 7 years, 6 years, whatever it is. The cherry on top is a future draft pick, and you're paying him absolutely nothing.
Well, okay. Well, when Christian Campbell hits 32 home runs and plays good defense, we'll talk about
Rookie. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
We need him to go to the National League. My God. I saw that, the thing about the pick floating around, but yeah, Sammy, you make a good point there. Like, I've been hoping that one of our guys will win the Rookie of the Year this year and get them an extra pick so that, like, end up...
Let me push back on that, because you know how it works in Japan. You pitch once a week. You don't pitch every 5 days. So adjusting to Major League Baseball is not always easy for these guys. So it wouldn't shock me if Roki struggled out the gate, maybe had to miss some time because he's, you know, fatigued. He's not used to pitching this much. We already talked about how he lost a little bit of velocity at the end of the season in 2024. So I don't think it's like guaranteed he's going to win Rookie of the Year. Lest we forget how brutal Major League Baseball is.
Yeah. I mean, Yamamoto got hurt and they haven't announced the awards yet, but he's not going to like it. Skeens and Merrill are going to both finish ahead of him.
Yamamoto pitched 90 innings. He's not even close.
Yeah. So, but either way, the favorites, Dodgers and Padres, are, I think, seen as the class above everyone else in terms of favorites. I'm sure it's going to be a continuous story throughout the offseason. We'll get like a tiny little nugget, like some reporter, some national guy, like Bob Nightingale will list off 10 teams that are the favorites for Sasaki, and the Red Sox will be one of the 10, and I'm sure as hell going to tweet it, and like eventually, like, it'll just keep coming up until he ends up signing. But yeah, I we're all pretty much in agreement that this has such little chance of signing him. Almost like it's like in my head, I almost want the Red Sox to like prioritize either like a Crochet trade or signing Fried and be like, yeah, we know Roki Sasaki's out there and can be out for nothing, but like you're the guy I want. We want to make progress on this trade while the Dodgers, who are interested in Crochet, are busy courting Roki Sasaki. We're going to be laying the groundwork for a trade here so we can get that across the finish line. Hey, Max Fried, while all these clubs are courting Roki Sasaki, we're going to court you because you're our priority. Like, it could be a chance for the Sox to get an advantage, albeit small, elsewhere. I don't know. Maybe just picking at straws there.
Yeah, I mean, that makes it even more like The Bachelor. Be like all that's flirty true. About it. Be like, oh, I don't even like you. I'm focused on this guy. By the way, the Astros have never signed a guy out of Japan. They've only had two Japanese players ever play for the team, Kaz Matsui and Norichika Aoki.
Max Free, do you accept this rose?
Ooh, hey, Maxi.
I don't think the ceremony is like that, Sammy.
Do you think John Henry calls up free agents and he's like, what are you doing, Max?
Well, you he's just laying on this pen.
Can you imagine? Can you just imagine? Yep, that's what I was just going to say. John Henry laying on his belly, kicking his feet. Hey, Corbin, what are you up to?
I don't know. I was just bored. I wanted to call in and say hi.
No, Corbin. You hang up. No, you hang up.
I love your cutter.
No, you hang up first.
Do you have any interest in coming on like an epic quest?
I knew you were going to say that.
Epic quest, baby. Let's go.
All right. Anyway, enough.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, well, we got to move on to the next part here as we get a little bit further on in the show. The other one that got a little bit of conversation this week with the Red Sox was Willy Adames. So Mark Feinstein had the Red Sox as a team that he said is expected to make a push to sign shortstop Willy Adames. The Dodgers, I know, it sounds ridiculous because we just talked about them being the favorites for Sasaki. They're the favorites for Willy Adames, too. I've seen other people say that the Giants could be co-favorites, too. I know Buster Posey has talked about needing a shortstop, so I feel like it's either going to be Willy Adames or Ha-Sung Kim for them. But Dodgers, Giants, Braves are teams that Mark Feinstein says are also expected to make a push. And then I believe it was the next day, John Morosi on MLB Network piggybacked off that report and gave a little bit of an idea, but it maybe felt like an educated idea. Joe, do you have the clip? Because we can play that and you can get like whatever sort of inclination, whatever ideas he has, whether it's informed or not, you make the decision.
First on the list, Willy Adames, and we were talking about this I think yesterday that he had open to switching positions. Is that the case? Good morning and welcome home.
Lauren, good morning. Thank you very much. I don't think it will be necessary for Adames to switch positions because there is sufficient interest in him as a shortstop. Here's what I mean by that. Let's take the Los Angeles Dodgers, for example. If Mookie Betts moves back to the infield, which is their plan, the infield for Mookie could be second base. And if the Dodgers were to sign Adamas, he's the shortstop. And in that situation, perhaps Gavin Lux is traded. I also look at a team like the San Francisco Giants as having interest in Willie Adamas. The Atlanta Braves are a fit for Adamas. Even the Boston Red Sox, depending on what Trevor Story's status is. Story has missed so much time that perhaps if they were to trade Marcelo Meyer in a deal to get pitching like a Garrett Crochet, for example, then there's a gap at shortstop for the long term. Maybe you go Adamas at short and play Story elsewhere. The bottom line, Lauren, is that Adamas is one of the most coveted free agent position players out there, and notably, in a lot of ways, his market does not overlap with Juan Soto's, so we could see him sign before Juan Soto does.
Okay, so there you have it. So John Morosi's idea here is for the Red Sox, what would make sense to him is sign Willie Adamas, whose value throughout his career, maybe a little bit less so this year, but certainly throughout his career, his value has been in large part due to his shortstop defense. So John Morosi says, sign him, play him at shortstop. He says, move Trevor Story. He doesn't specify where, but I think safe assumption is second base. And then Marcelo Meyer, who is what your shortstop, middle infielder, whatever of the future, goes in a potential Garrett Crochet trade. I guess the first question I should ask you guys on this is, if the Red Sox were to be in on Willie Adamas, do you like that idea? Or do you want to be one of those teams that's going to pitch him on switching positions, which he has said he would do for the right price and for the right team, to potentially play third base and either move Devers to first base and trade Tristan Casas, which obviously I hate, or
no,
move Devers to DH and Willie Adamas is your third base, which personally I think is flat out impossible because his agent said it's not happening, but it can be an idea that they can broach him about.
Yeah, I don't. Adamas feels kind of like the trap contract of the offseason. Initially, I thought, oh yeah, great, get Devers off of third, put Adamas at third, your defense improves, you get a right-handed bat. But Adamas, 29 years old, took a pretty significant step back defensively last year. Nobody's really talking about that. He went from like 95th percentile to 68th, so still a good defender, but that's not premium defense. On top of that, the Red Sox big issue is they're not good at hitting left-handed pitching. Adamas is a right-handed bat, but he doesn't hit lefties particularly well. And that's not just last year. That's kind of a trend that he's had over his entire career. And then on top of that, another issue the Red Sox have is striking out. And Adamas, he walks a lot, but he strikes out a lot too. So I just don't see the fit, really. It wouldn't be the worst thing ever. Obviously, it'd be exciting. But yeah, I would pass on this if I'm the Red Sox.
Yeah, no, I'm with Sammy. We heard about Adamas a couple months ago, and even then, it didn't really make sense. This is before we knew about the potential position change. I mean, he kind of feels like he's obviously coming off a better season than a couple years ago, but he feels a lot like a Story contract in terms of you're really, really banking on a guy being healthy, playing really good shortstop, and hitting for power. Shortstops don't age that great when it comes to that. So having Story for 3 more years on his deal, I would imagine Adamas is getting a 5 to 6 year deal. Defense is on the decline. He can't hit lefties. And then 3 years from now, you have a 32-year-old average defensive shortstop at Adamas, a 34-year-old Story at second base if he's still at second base or if he's third. And then you're really punting on Marcelo as a prospect, which I think we saw enough this year where in the national media did too. He's skyrocketed back up the rankings. He's top 10, top 12 across the board everywhere. And I would just so much rather wait a year in terms of the shortstop stuff and see what Marcelo is. Cause I think Marcelo long-term is going to be a much better fit than Willie. I hate the idea all around. I'd actually be pissed if we signed Willie Adamas.
I also, on top of that, How does the configuration work? Because you just mentioned Marcelo Meyer. He would be moved in this case, we think, in a trade. But then also there's Christian Campbell, who some people like even more than Marcelo Meyer. And he right now is going to get a shot to break camp as the second baseman to start the season. I think that's not confirmed or anything. That's just what I think is going to happen. It's going to be him and Grissom fighting for that spot. So instead of those young guys, you're now putting in, Pat, what you just described, an aging, declining, we think is going to decline, shortstop who's going to have to move to third base, and then you have your other declining, aging shortstop who you're going to have to move to second base. This just sounds like a clusterfuck.
Yeah, and so the other question that you guys kind of are answering and have answered is, would you do it for $150 to $200 million, which is what he's expected to get? I think it's going to be closer to $200. He's probably going to get $180 million. I personally hate the idea, no matter how it lays out. I think if I had to pick whether he played second, or sorry, whether he was a shortstop or a third baseman, I would pick the shortstop one, because at least in that world, DH is still open and you can give guys a shot. And if you don't love what you have, Vlad Jr. is out there next year. But if they're signing Adames for $150, $200 million, they're probably not going to go out and pay Vlad next year. With Adames, and another reason I wouldn't even do it at all. Which one of you guys said that it was kind of the trap contract of the offseason? I see, Sammy, that is spot on. And Pat, did you compare it to Story? Also spot on. Because I feel exactly about Adames how I felt about Story. It's like, yeah, they'd be getting a really good player. But you look at the stats, last 4 years, this is a guy who's had an 800 or better OPS just one time in the last 4 years. You'd be paying a premium for shortstop defense that either A, you're going to put at third base, or B, you're going to put at shortstop. But Sammy, as you pointed out, his defensive season this year was not what it's been in the past. So to me, you cannot pay for a shortstop, because shortstops make more money. Shortstop's the most important position on the diamond. I thought it was ridiculous when the Mets were going to pay Carlos Correa $300 million to play third base. The Red Sox would be making that same mistake if they did that to put Adames at third base. Not to mention that if that was the path, you get an upset Raffy. His agent made it pretty clear that Devers takes pride in third base, wants to play third base. It would be causing a lot of issues. And if you put him at short, now you've got, you know, for the foreseeable future, two middle infielders at short and second that are in their 30s. That with Story has declined significantly from his prime, and Adames, it wouldn't be shocking to see the same. That happens to a lot of guys around this age that play that position, especially. And then last but not least for me, if you sign him and he goes to third base and Devers goes to DH, you're basically replacing Tyler O'Neill's offensive production with Willy Adames's offensive production, which by OPS was 50 points worse last year than O'Neill. And you'd be paying over $100 million more for it. Yes, the K's are a little bit better, but he's still a pretty good amount below league average in terms of strikeouts. He was 28th percentile this year. And then obviously, Massa goes. And if Massa goes, then you're getting worse strikeout-wise.
You're also replacing Devers' third base defense with Adames at third base. So it's not just the OPS. You'd be getting a boost defensively, but I don't even think that's worth it. And at least with Story, like, Story's also declining. At least he's still playing elite defense when he's out there. He's top of the heap defensively still. Yep. Still grades out beautifully in all those categories. We just don't get to see much of it. The Adames signing would be fantastic for 2025, and that's probably it. After that, I feel like it would get pretty ugly. Be very, very short-sighted to sign a guy like that. Nothing against him. It's just the fit isn't great.
Yeah, and you just said it, Sammy. Trevor Story's shortstop defense is amazing. So why would you pay a premium for a guy either to play shortstop and he probably isn't even as good at shortstop as the guy you have, or he doesn't play shortstop and you've paid a premium for a guy who plays shortstop to not play shortstop? It doesn't add up.
Cool. So we all agree we want the Red Sox to spend $200 million on Adames. Awesome.
Would you go... If you had to pick one for the Red Sox to spend $175 million on, would you pick Willy Adames or Alex Bregman?
Oh.
Bregman. I'd go Bregman.
If I had to, okay, wait, hold on. So the contracts are the same. The term is the same, right?
Yeah. Say everything is the same. So I believe is Bregman 2 years old?
31 on. He's going to be 31 on opening day.
Let me check Willie Adams for you.
That's a hard question. That's kind of a mean question to ask. How dare you,
Sammy? While you think, I'll elaborate on mine. I would lean Bregman, just because historically he's a better player. He's had better years over a longer period of time. He has the championship pedigree. He has a relationship, I think, with Cora, and he's also open to playing second base apparently. So that to me is much more interesting. I mean, I would sign either of them, but Bregman on paper, I think I like better.
Yeah, I guess I go Bregman. He doesn't strike out, plays good defense still, says he's willing to move to second base, but it's just the age these are both great 2025 moves that would hurt for years after. So hopefully neither, but if I had to choose, I'd go Bregman.
I'd also go Bregman. The contact and the defense, it's like, if you look at the Red Sox, what did they struggle with? They struggled with hitting lefties, which Bregman does well, and they struggled with making contact and putting the ball in play, which Bregman does well. And they had a lot of young guys and they didn't have a lot of leadership. Bregman is obviously a proven leader. I don't personally want them to sign Bregman because I don't think the contract's going to age well. He may not hit for an 800 OPS at any point in the contract. It's the same thing as Adames, but at least with Bregman, there's less hoops to jump through to make it make sense.
Bregman doesn't hit lefties either. I'm looking right now. These guys both have reverse splits. Bregman had
Is
a
Bregman 7, reverse?
712 OPS versus lefties. That's very mid.
Oof.
Yeah.
That's wild. All right. What about go to one of the years where he had 1,000 OPS, if you
both
can.
Breggy?
Yeah. Because I'm curious. Like, yeah. Well, he didn't have a 20. He wasn't that in 2022, was he?
When was he best here? Versus lefties?
I thought it was 2019.
It's a big gap still. Like,
give me 2019. That was his best year. 2019 was his best year.
2019, 740. No, sorry. Yeah, he crushed lefties in 2019, but that was 5 years ago. So
he also had trash cans in 2019.
Yeah, I was about to say he was also cheating, but
wait, 2019 was no. That was the legit run they went on. 2019, 2017 was when they were trash canning.
But they didn't get caught until after the 19 season. So you don't know.
Was there evidence of them doing it? I don't know. Who fucking cares?
I don't think so.
Neither of these guys are a good fit for the Red Sox. End of story. Go Sox.
Yeah. The right-handed bat.
2019 was buzzer season.
Oh, that's yeah. Altuve with the thing?
Yeah, Altuve.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And he was like, my wife just didn't want me to take my shirt off on TV. And we're like, all right, bro. Yeah. All right. Your wife didn't want you. Okay.
Yeah.
She
but
sounds
no,
cool.
But this, what the discussion highlights is how difficult the equation is for the Red Sox offense this offseason. I think so many people are so focused on getting the ace and fixing a rotation that was actually pretty good last year. Obviously, we all agree it needs to get better and the ceiling needs to get higher. But the offense is going to be difficult. It is going to be difficult to put that together next year to fix all your problems. I don't think there really is a way to do it, to both improve them against left-handed pitching while also improving their strikeout numbers, while also not overhauling the entire thing and like trading several guys who have tons of years of control or that you've extended. Like,
I think,
I don't know.
Gordo, I think it's as simple as, I think you bring in Teoscar Hernandez, who crushes lefties, and he has a slightly lower strikeout rate than Tyler O'Neill, which is
but
who
he still
be
strikes
replacing.
Out a ton.
I know. But it's you can't make it perfect. It's not going to be perfect. This helps
exactly.
You slightly in the strikeout category, big time in the hitting left-handed pitching category. And then you
no,
give
it doesn't,
Christian
because O'Neill
Campbell
was better. O'Neill was better
against lefties.
O'Neill was the third best hitter in baseball against left-handed pitching last year, behind only Aaron Judge and Helio Ramos.
Last year he was, but like, I don't know. I'd feel better about Teoscar against lefties in 2025, 26, 27.
Also,
and then
the
improving
other thing-
your best lefty hitter. Like taking Tyler O'Neill out and replacing, you're not going to get better than what he did last year against lefties. It's just not going to happen.
Probably.
He had like a 1,200 OPS.
The other thing to factor in here is Teoscar played a lot more games than Tyler O'Neill. So availability, I would actually take over the slightly less numbers against lefties if he's going to be able to play 150 plus.
I would too. I would too. But I think that simply, and I tweet this, it's so funny. I literally tweeted this exact thing a few days ago, but simply swapping Tyler O'Neill out for Teoscar, like, yes, like I think people like the idea of Teoscar a lot better than O'Neill. But like, even when O'Neill was out there, it was an imperfect lineup against lefties. It was bad. And yeah, it's going to be the same because
Campbell coming. You have to assume you have Campbell coming. Like he crushes lefties in the minors. So like that's another guy. Catcher, we don't know. If you get Travis d'Arnaud, then all of a sudden you have a guy at the bottom of your lineup, backup catcher, you slot him in, put him in against lefties. He hits lefties very well. So there's still ways to do. And by the way, Teoscar also hits right-handed pitching very well. 808 OPS. Tyler O'Neill did not hit righties at all. So overall, I think he'd be getting better with Teoscar. And then Christian Campbell. I'm very confident that Campbell's going to be the second baseman to start the season. I'm super high on that guy. So, I think they'll get a little bit better against left-handed pitching, but I think they just have to accept that they're going to be an imperfect lineup, and maybe you address it at the deadline if it's a massive issue again.
One idea that I have, because you look at the spots in the lineup that, because obviously like Devers and Duran smash righties, both not that great against lefties. Like they can hit them, but it's not great.
Yeah.
The guys that you had in the lineup last year that were right-handed hitting lefties, it was basically Ref Snyder, Connor Wong, Sadon Rafaela, Romy eventually got a lot of time. I don't know what his role is going to be, but the two I look at there are Wong and Sadon Rafaela. Sammy, I agree with you. If they upgrade from Connor Wong, then that helps. But to me, the one way that if you actually want to combat both the swing and the strikeouts, and hitting left-handed pitching, Sadon Rafaela, another reverse splits guy, hit righties better than lefties, and honestly didn't hit that much at all. They've extended him, so I don't know how realistic it is to do this, but if they had him be a super utility guy, and if their Garrett Crochet trade, which you will hear plenty about tomorrow as we get closer to the end of this one, we will drop another and talk about Crochet. I say tomorrow, but it's not tomorrow. It's Wednesday. It's dropping Wednesday. But if you were to make the Garrett Crochet trade a trade for Garrett Crochet and Luis Robert, and Sadon Rafaela becomes a utility player, now you're better. You're much better against left-handed pitching because you don't have the Sadon black hole in the lineup.
Yeah, I don't know about moving Sadon. I mean, that just craters his value, in my opinion, because his best trait, as we know, center field defense. So I don't know. That's a conversation for another day. I just think you're going to have to. I mean, the offense was good last year. It was one of the better offenses in Major League Baseball. So I think if you can improve it slightly, that's a good thing. So I'm not super concerned about the offense.
So we have to wrap. So in lieu of Nuff said, I'm going to ask you guys a question. And you're going to give me a semi-fast response because we are a big-time vibes podcast. So many freaking reports are out there that the Red Sox are back, that they're going to spend money, that they're going to be super active in the trade market. We talk about it every episode, but the fact of the matter is more and more quotes come out every single episode. Are you bought in?
Oh, I think I am. It's what we talked about last episode. It's not the Red Sox talking shit. It's the agents and people around the teams. It's like, we didn't get this last year. We got a sprinkle. I think there was like one time where somebody said like, oh, they're talking a big, I think it was actually Boris said something. But it was very off the cuff, kind of minor. Nothing like this, what we're getting in this offseason. So, yeah, I'm ready to get hurt again.
Pat, are you ready to get hurt again, or are you still trying to hold those walls firm?
I'm all the way bought in. I'm so in. I believe every word. I believe we're gonna spend so much money. We're going to be so good next year. I'm all the way in.
Here, Pat, here's what Boris said. I believe, yeah, this was November of 2023. Boris said he was told that the Red Sox, quote, intend to be in, aggressive in improving. That's a mouthful. Aggressive in improving. So that was the only thing we got outside of the Red Sox bubble last year. Way more smoke this year. So just saying, it's hard not to be bought in.
You have
Boris.
You have Spear. You have Buster Olney. You have John Heyman, I guess. Yeah. JP Morosi. You have me and Gordo were talking about this when we were in my car before the gala. You have Kylie McDaniel saying that the Sox are back spending, going to be blah, 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 blah. Oh, no, sorry. Not
Robert Murray.
Robert Murray.
Robert Murray.
I was going to say, the young guy. The young guy.
Robert Murray. Robert Murray.
Who Robert Murray poo-pooed it.
Kind of bashes the Sox moves.
Admittedly,
even
too.
Even he was like, I know I love to bash the Red Sox. They're going to spend money. They're going to be in the market. I'm all the way in. I'm 100% in.
That's what pushed me over the edge too, Pat, was when Robert Murray, who literally spent the entire offseason last year talking about how sorry he feels for Red Sox fans because it's bullshit what they're being forced to go through, was like, they're coming back. So I'm ready to get hurt again. I respect it if you're not. I still think most Red Sox fans are not going to let themselves get to that point. But as someone who is as deep in the weeds with this shit as I am, it's impossible.
I think Red Sox fans are going to throw that shit all out the window, and they're all going to be like, "Oh no, we're back, we're so back," and then they're going to get hurt.
You
got to
see my comments. My comments, really? Anytime I post any of these things, are fucking show me. Which is true.
I don't believe it.
I agree with them still, but I'm in too deep, man. I'm telling everyone who will listen. I think the Sox are going to do stuff this offseason.
I think that's self-preservation. I think people are already bought. Even they're like, yeah, right, you got to freaking show me. And they're like, I agree, you do got to show me, but come on. We'll see.
Yep, we will see. It is still a show me thing, but we're ready to get hurt again. It doesn't mean that we think they're going to sign Soto. We all agree that they're not going to sign Soto, but they have money to spend. They have players they're interested in. There's trade targets there's so much Garrett Crochet smoke. Again, tune in again Wednesday, because we will certainly be talking Garrett Crochet on Wednesday. That's going to do it for today's episode of Play Tessie, episode 149. We appreciate you guys tuning into this one. Remember, rate, subscribe, 5 stars. Subscribe everywhere you get your podcasts. Wow. Also on YouTube, on the Play Tessie playlist on the WEI channel. Hit the thumbs up on the videos. Subscribe to WEI. And check us out at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. A great follow. And yeah, man, let the off season commence. They say it's going to be slow moving again. I think there are some things that could move a little bit quicker, but I think the winter meetings are going to be fun this year. So we got about a month to go until we get to that point. Get ready, baby. It's coming. But till next time, tune in. We're talking Crochet 2 days. Thanks for tuning in to this one, though. Peace.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.